Call to order a meeting of the House Judiciary Committee for Friday, February 16, 2007. It's a fairly short agenda because one of the bills that had been earlier scheduled, well, a couple of bills have been pulled, both one because of availability of witnesses and the other because there's some further changes that were being made. That was House Bill 2381, also a Oregon Law Commission bill. So we will be holding public hearings on 2384 and 2385 only today. I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2384. Council Cummings.
Thank you, Chairman Pearson, members of the committee. House Bill 2384 clarifies that it ensures liability to a policyholder who was an occupant of a motor vehicle is presumed to not exceed the liability limits of the insurance available to the policyholder.
And we have Wendy Johnson from the Oregon Law Commission here. Ms. Johnson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Wendy Johnson, Deputy Director of the Oregon Law Commission. As counsel explained, House Bill 2384, just some clarifying on what is primary and what is excess. It actually only adds three words. That's all the bill does, is adds three words to one of the statutes there, 742.504. The Law Commission had five automobile insurance reform bills last session. One of them was to deal with this relationship between what's primary and what's excess. There were lots of additions and deletions, and somehow we overlooked that three words were deleted that we needed to keep. So those three words are added back in, and that's all that bill does. The bill was reviewed by the Law Commission's Auto Insurance Work Group. No one had objections to that, and it was also approved by the Oregon Law Commission. So you have a report that explains what that fix-up is, but it's literally adding three words. We do have three members of our work group here who are here today, Joel DeVore with LaVos Cobb and Eugene, and Neil Jackson, and who does plaintiff side work, and Steve Morrell with State Farm. So those three will come up, but probably more on the more complicated bill, which is our second bill. But if you have questions, more technical questions, I think they'd be better apt to answer them on the first bill as well.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Why don't you stay there for a moment, and let's find out whether we need to bring those other witnesses forward. Are there questions that would be helpfully put to them? I mean, the situation is three words were deleted, if I'm understanding right, in the last revision to the statute that created a potential ambiguity about what the reference meant here, as you see on page 5 of the printed bill, and by restoring those three words, we clarify that ambiguity. Any questions that would be useful to put to those folks? Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I was just curious if that, from the passage of this bill in 2005, it had created any problem with insurers in dealing with this type of potential loss.
Chair McPherson, Representative Flores, my understanding is that as a practical matter, the three missing words haven't created chaos. This is model insurance language, and so most policies were sort of in effect already, and people understand that there's a mistake there. So it's not too large of a deal, but we don't want to have to litigate the problem either.
And we could probably get the other folks could elaborate on that if there were any desire to hear it. Okay. Looks like there's people are happy enough with that explanation. So if there are no further questions, then I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2384 and open a work session on House Bill 2384. And I would invite a motion to move this out to the floor and place it on the consent calendar.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2384 to the floor with a due pass on the consent calendar.
Representative Barker has moved House Bill 2384 to the floor with a due pass recommendation for placement on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bonamici?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Kump?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair McPherson?
Aye. House Bill 2384 has moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation for placement on the consent calendar. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2384 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2385. Council.
Thank you, Chair McPherson, members of the committee. House Bill 2385 deals with self-insurance. It requires self-insurers to provide insurance coverage for permissive drivers of their vehicles. It establishes that such coverage is secondary to any coverage available to the permissive driver, and that the self-insurer must make payments only when the permissive driver's policy does not provide the minimum amount required by Oregon law. It permits a self-insurer to recover from the permissive driver any money paid by the self-insurer to the injured party. It allows injured parties to collect from their own uninsured or underinsured coverage if the amount they recovered from the self-insurer was less than the uninsured liability limit.
Ms. Johnson.
Thank you, Chair McPherson, members of the committee. Again, Wendy Johnson, Deputy Director of the Oregon Law Commission. This bill, again, comes to you from recommended by the Oregon Law Commission to fix a hole in the automobile insurance statutes regarding self-insured vehicles. As counsel explained, it requires self-insurers to pay liability damages that are up to the financial responsibility limits like other cars that are on the road that are not self-insured. The Assembly has permitted persons to self-insure if they have at least 25 cars to self-insure. So we're usually talking about rental cars or fleets of cars, with a telephone company or something like that. The problem is with, especially with rental cars, if you have permissive users that are not employees, and so there is a gap in the law and that does not require covering those permissive users. And so this bill requires coverage of permissive users, but only if the permissive user doesn't have insurance, that then the self-insurer would be liable. It also clarifies a couple of other areas regarding a liability statute and how that interrelates with the insurance statute. It clarifies secondary users and also talks about uninsured and underinsured and how that's excess for self-insured cars. I have more experts than I on this area of auto insurance that I'd like to bring up on that front, but you have a one-page summary of the bill, and then you also have the Law Commission's report that explains the bill, but it truly is a gap in the law that folks literally can't protect themselves under present law, because a self-insured car is never an uninsured car, so you can't even go to your own policy in these situations. And so there's a compromise of not making the self-insured owner always pay, but there's a fairness made through this bill.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Johnson. And if there are no questions for Ms. Johnson, then why don't we bring the other three people and bring them up together, or should...
I just want to add one more thing. This bill does need an amendment, and it's noted at the last page of our report. It's all in gray-shaded language. The gray-shaded language was approved by the Law Commission at its Law Commission meeting, and so, as you know, legislative counsel is not taking amendments during this period until initial bill filings are done. And so we've highlighted what needs to be done, but that is a recommendation of the Law Commission to add in some of those words that are in gray shading, and those are noted in the report by footnotes of why those amendments were needed, but it further clarifies the bill.
Okay. If there are no questions, then why don't we bring the panel forward and bring the three of them together to help us understand this bill fully.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Joel DeVore from Luvas Cobb, law firm in Eugene. I'll let the other gentlemen introduce themselves.
I'm Neil Jackson. I'm representing the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association.
Chair, members of the committee, I'm Steve Merle with State Farm Insurance. All three of us were members of the automobile subgroup last session.
Very good. Thank you, gentlemen. I think it made a little fuller explanation about the situation that the bill deals with. It might be helpful to put it in the form of an example so that people can kind of see how it would operate as people are actually navigating the roadways.
If I may, Mr. Chair. If I may, let me begin by giving you the most fundamental principle of Oregon's financial responsibility law, which is the mandated liability insurance that every driver and every car owner has to have in Oregon. And, of course, that's, as you all know, every car owner must have the minimum $50,000, 25 per person, 50,000 per accident, liability insurance. And one feature of that is that the car insurance that each of us buys for our car must cover the people who drive our car with our consent, not people who take it, you know, who don't have our permission, but people who do have our permission have our insurance. Well, the statutes have, for a good while, created a privilege for people who have fleets of cars who want to avoid the cost of buying insurance to self-insure. And the statute has always said that, fine, you can get a certificate of self-insurance if you pay the same amounts as you would as if you bought insurance. The quirk happened about 1994 when there was a fight between an insurance company and a rental agency. And the result of that opinion in that fight was that a self-insurer, surprise, did not have to cover someone who was driving the car with the permission of the owner. And the more you stop and think about it, you realize that means that in the unhappy situation where someone has, for example, rented a car, and for some reason their spouse, you know, they're going through a divorce, has canceled their insurance, or they just didn't pay their bill when they thought, or they're excluded from their own insurance for some quirk, and it happens. The driver's own insurance fails for some reason. Normally, in most situations, someone driving your car would have your coverage as a backup. So the car accident victim out there would still get $25,000 or $50,000. The hole that exists for self-insurance is not true when the insurance on the driver fails. The owner of that self-insured car skates, doesn't have to pay a thing. The accident victim gets zero in liability dollars. So this bill fixes two things. So the first thing it fixes is to say, well, wait a minute, when it said pay the same amount, that means you provide the same scope of coverage insofar as you must cover the person who drives with the permission of the owner of the car. So when a car rental agency puts the name of, you know, Susan Smith on that rental receipt, that's the person with consent, and that person will have at least backup coverage. Now, we've worked, and we appreciate the efforts of the self-insurers who are here and able to answer questions for you, too. We've worked with them to be clear in saying that the self-insurance in this situation is just backup insurance. It's there only if the driver's insurance isn't there. So that part of the language of the bill is saying, you know, this is not primary insurance. It's simply insurance if the driver's fails. And there's an incidental thing as part of the amendments, which is important, that was just made by the Law Commission. The statute currently says that the self-insured car must have its own uninsured or underinsured, its own uninsured motorist coverage for the occupants of that car, too. And so we made it a change so that one of the amendments is so that it's consistent, so that the uninsured motorist coverage, so if the person in the rental car is hit by an uninsured motorist, heaven forbid, they will also have uninsured motorist coverage, but we do the same thing, saying the self-insurance is secondary only if there is no insurance that the occupant or the driver has. So we've made that consistent, both the liability coverage and the uninsured motorist. Now, if I haven't lost you on that, let me talk about the other serious hole that exists in your own auto insurance policies. If you're hit by a self-insured car on your way home today, and forget whether you get the first $25,000 or $50,000. If the driver of that self-insured car didn't have their own insurance today, that driver won't have to pay, and the self-insurance car owner won't have to pay. You'll get nothing, and you'll turn to your own uninsured motorist coverage that you've paid exactly for that event. In the event that you're hit by someone who didn't have their insurance and you're hurt, $100,000 worth of medical bills, you'll turn to your own coverage and you'll say, I want this. And you'll discover that written in the fine print of your policy, I'm sorry to my State Farm colleague, it's not fine print, it's there, but none of us read our policies. By definition, it says an uninsured car is this, that, and the other, and it says it is not a self-insured car. Because the assumption is the self-insured car is always going to be paying. Well, we know from this 94 case, not so. So you may get zero from the liability company, and you'll get zero from your own uninsured motorist that you paid for exactly that situation. And it's once the whole is actually one step worse. Suppose the driver of that self-insured car did have his coverage of 25, or suppose you have a good company like Hertz or Enterprise that's probably going to step up and voluntarily cover that, as do the backup coverage anyway that the statute doesn't require them to do. You get the 25, but you've got the $100,000 of medical bills, and you turn to your own coverage. Your own auto policy does the same thing with underinsured motorist coverage. It says, by definition, an underinsured car is not a self-insured car. So even though you only got $25,000 for your medical bills and you've paid for $100,000 or $1 million of UIM coverage in your policy sitting at home in your file cabinet, you'll get zero. And so the second fix in this bill that's important is simply to change the language, the assumption that was made, and you don't want to hear me explain probably my guesses about how the statute got to be this way, but is to change that simply to say, if you don't get the $25,000, your own policy will provide the appropriate uninsured and underinsured motorist coverage that you assume. So these bills simply give you the coverage you probably would have assumed you always have, but didn't know you don't.
Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just looking at the automobile report and the amendments. One of them says nothing in this section requires a self-insurer to provide liability when a person is operating the vehicle without permission of the self-insurer. But I just want to be sure that doesn't mean I'm a retired cop, and I used to run into these cases where you have a rental car that they rented for a week in California, and now it's 5 weeks later and they're in Oregon, they haven't paid since. I want to be sure that that car would still be covered, the insurance on that, even though they're driving without permission, essentially, because they've overrun their lease. But I would hate to see that fall through the cracks as well.
You know, the bill doesn't address that situation. I hate to say that's why we have courts for those kinds of things. Right now, a typical auto policy might have the same situation. If the rental company had purchased fleet insurance, traditional insurance, you'd have the same legal question. Are they driving without permission? So we don't try to answer yes or no on that situation.
Okay. I'd like to make a statement of intent, then, if we vote on this today.
Well, we won't be moving it today because there's a requested amendment anyway, and which unfortunately sets it over probably a couple of weeks at least before we would be able to move it. Further questions? Council.
Thank you. In the situation that Representative Barker was just talking about, would the accident victim's own uninsured or underinsured coverage kick in at that point? So if there's a permissive driver allows his buddy to drive the car, and that person doesn't have insurance and crashes into somebody, and so the self-insurer wouldn't have to pay under this amendment and the driver doesn't have insurance, would the victim's own uninsured now kick in?
Today?
If this bill passes.
Yes, if the bill passes, you'll fix the second hole that's in all of our policies, and then this fix will, and that's a good question. It's a good follow-up question to the prior one, too. Exactly.
Were we going to hear remarks from Mr. Morrell and Mr. Jackson, or are you... Okay.
Neil Jackson, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I don't need to say much more, except I need to correct my written testimony. I'm living 2 years ago, and on the first sentence it says Senate Bill 922. That was the bill last session. That needs to be changed to House Bill 2385. Other than that, I would add one thing. There was a case that came down in 2004 called Haynes versus TriMet. Our Supreme Court, I believe, essentially threw out the previous three cases that Mr. DeVore referred to about whether or not self-insureds have to provide coverage that our financial responsibility law says they've got to provide it. The reason that we support this bill is we don't want to spend another 5 years litigating whether the Haynes versus TriMet case overturned Thompson, Neal, and Snappy Carr. As I read it, it did. But it's another 3 to 5 years of litigation that we're going to have to do if we don't get House Bill 2385 passed. I believe what we're doing is, with some improvements, we're codifying what the Supreme Court said in Haynes versus TriMet.
Mr. Mr. Morrell, did you, or actually Representative Cameron had a question.
Well, go ahead and I want to ask a question.
Mr. Morrell, do you have any comments to offer?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Steve Morrell again for the record for State Farm Insurance. Just to kind of maybe emphasize a couple things, maybe clarify some points that Joel had made. The first thing that for all the members of the committee, this addresses a fairly exotic and rare situation in auto insurance. And it's primarily been a theoretical issue. There have been some cases I've become aware of where it was a practical concern. This bill will remove that as a practical concern. Part of what you're seeing here and why this is so messy is we also have some competing public policy issues. In insurance, you can have a public policy of saying insurance should follow a car or insurance should follow a driver. And depending on how you philosophically perceive those two options, you might want to say one's better than the other. In Oregon, we have generally chosen the public policy route of coverage should follow a car. And so the people driving the car should be covered when they're driving it. What you see happening, though, with the self-insurance situation is if I am a self-insurer and I have to cover people who drive my car, especially if I'm a rental car company where these people are strangers to me, that presents some problems for me, so I might want insurance to follow the person. So what you see in this bill is kind of an eclectic mix of following the person, following the car, but directed at making sure there's compensation when the situation happens. And that's really what this bill does, is try to reconcile and harmonize those competing policies.
Okay. Representative Cameron.
I don't know, just being practical about this, how is this going to impact me when I, or a citizen in the state, when they go up to the counter of a rental agency at the Portland airport? Can you describe what we might see differently as a result of that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, I think that when you go up to the counter of a rental car agency, you're probably not going to perceive any difference. There's not going to be any special contracts that are different than are issued today. It's just going to be if you get in this rare situation where these combination of factors converge, you're going to be able to get compensation for sure where it may have been questionable before this bill.
Follow-up, if I may. No noticeable difference, but how about in rates? Or, I mean, is there going to be a cost to the rental car companies that they don't have today, or a cost to my private insurance on my automobile policy that I don't have today that'll be built in, that there won't be any lights that go off, but it'll be put in there someplace?
Mr. Chair, Representative McPherson, I think I'll let the rental car people speak to the expense end of it because they're the ones that know for sure. If you look at the bill, though, the layers of coverage are built in, whether the coverage of last resort. So it's going to be everybody else that has insurance coverage paying before you get to the rental car companies. How much that will impact, I think I'll let them speak to that.
One more then. So can you speak from a private or from a State Farm standpoint, and what would I see as a customer of State Farm then?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, my feeling is that, and from running this by people in our offices, we will have some situations now where we will pay some underinsured motorist claims that we would not have been liable for in the past. This is so rare that I don't think it will have actuarial significance. So the bill you pay, it's not going to be something that we're going to be able to segregate out and say it makes the cost go up because the other factors in the environment are going to overshadow it so heavily.
One more. Okay. Will it be in the interview process as a customer, would there be a question that says, do you ever rent cars? Or would that be a question that might be asked that underwriting would be looking at that they don't look at today?
Chair McPherson, Representative Cameron, and not anything that they don't look at today. There are limitations when you're driving cars that you don't own as far as when those are covered and how long they're covered because we want to have one policy covering one car generally. Your agent in underwriting your policy and seeing what kinds of products would benefit you would probably still ask those questions so that he makes sure he offers the options that would be to your best advantage if you have those exposures.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure I understand this, and similar to Representative Cameron's questions. My understanding is that you wouldn't need this if everybody who rented a car opted for the extra insurance, but they decline. And the problem comes up when the people who decline don't have their own insurance. Is that correct? So we're really talking about not very many people?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bonamici. That's true for the first fix, but the bill has two parts. And that the answer would be no, it's not true as to the underinsured motorist feature of the bill, which deals with your policy you've got when you're the other car and you see. So the first question is what liability coverage will come either from the driver of that self-insured car or from the owner of that self-insured car. But the second question is, well, but if you're hurt worse, either if they have nothing at all, or if you're hurt worse than the 25, and you, even if you do get their 25, your underinsured motorist coverage today won't pay. And so the second part of this are the claims that that Steve referred to that maybe actuarially will be less frequent, but will happen sometimes. You will get the underinsured motorist coverage tomorrow after this bill passes that you won't get today.
Thank you.
Representative Flores.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the examples that you've provided us, you've been talking primarily about rental car companies, but this is applying to fleets 25 and over, so I think there was reference made to companies that have fleets of vehicles. So how would this affect a permissive driver who wasn't the one that was entitled to be driving a company car?
Chair McPherson, Representative Flores, I think that's an important point that I actually meant to talk about in kind of my summary. The primary impact is going to be on rental car type fleets, because if you have a self-insured fleet as an employer, what happens in that situation is you have a relationship with your employees that when they're on a mission for you and they cause an accident, then their liability is going to be what we call imputed, transferred back to the employer. And so in those situations, we didn't find the problem we're having with rental cars because the company was liable for the acts of the employee. Whereas if you don't have a relationship with a renter that causes that transfer of liability back to the rental car company, they had no obligation or no incentive to help that person. If it was, let's say, I think the example has, let's say Nike was self-insured, which I don't know if they are or not. That's a huge corporation, has a lot of assets. This would not become an issue because you'd be able to get full compensation with what Nike has as far as assets. Where it becomes a problem is when you have strangers in the sense of a customer of a rental car company, and the rental car company would have no obligation to indemnify for their acts.
Quick follow-up.
Yeah, please.
And I think I get that. But in your example, the Nike employee, but wonder if the Nike employee's spouse was driving the vehicle.
Chair McPherson, Representative Flores, in the sense of a spouse, we've been in the same place we are today with the rental car companies, because that spouse would be a stranger to the car, and you'd have another issue of whether Nike had granted permission for that spouse to drive the car.
Thank you, Chair McPherson. And anybody can answer this, but I'm curious when a bill comes back for a second time around. You said that this was heard in the Senate in 05. How come we didn't pass it last time?
We had a different makeup, Chairman, Representative Kong. We had a different makeup of the legislature last time.
Well, that's always obvious, but I appreciate your comment, and because it does seem like it's a reasonable request.
Chair McPherson, if I may, Representative Kong, one of the other things I have is, last session, the rental car companies, we never really clearly had articulated what their issue with it was. I wasn't sure whether they were opposed or neutral to the bill, and I think they can come and talk to you about that. But that uncertainty caused the bill just to linger and not go anywhere.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, I have a question, which is, it seems to me that we should not have self-insurance unless the self-insured entity steps into all the responsibilities that an insurance company would hold. Is that the effect of this? Is it the organization like the rental car company or the major company that has a fleet of cars provided for employee use and maybe permissive use by others? Does it put them in the same position or the public in the same position if there's a self-insured fleet operator as it would be if there were an insurer?
Chair McPherson, members of the committee, it is a step in that direction. I think from the public standpoint, as far as how compensation is available, absolutely puts them in that situation. It does not put them in a situation where the insurance on the car or the self-insurance on the car is the first layer of coverage. And that goes back to that eclectic mix of the competing policies of does insurance call it follow the car or follow the driver that I talked about earlier.
Any further questions? I think we've exhausted our curiosity or understanding at this point of these issues. So if there are no further questions on House Bill 2385, and because there's an amendment that's been requested, which means it's probably set over at least a couple of weeks, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2385. Members, as I had indicated to you earlier, we have no agenda set for Monday, so we'll have another day off because of backup getting amendments back from legislative council. So we'll see you on Tuesday. We are adjourned.